Jason and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Monday, February the 5th, 2018 at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Your second daily dose of happy for the day. And I know that this Monday is not always the happiest day of the week for people, but I'm having a good Monday and Wendy's having a good Monday. So we're hoping that by joining us, you're having a good Monday. How is that for a good piece of positive analysis, Wendy?
I liked it. Well put.
You got to get off to the right start. And that's what you were trying to convince me on before during the pre-show. And, you know, I figured you were right. I really should be trying to get it off on the right foot. That's a good thing to do. By the way, speaking of getting it off on the right foot, I can't tell you exactly when during this hour it's going to happen. But I can tell from the way the numbers are working, sometime during this number, we are going to reach our 20,000th play.
Fabulous.
It's been great how it's just been moving right along. It's like a thousand every few days and so forth, and we finally reached the magic 20,000 number. So we're excited here at LOA today, and we hope you are too. We also are excited because we're going to take on a book project, which has been kind of a successful thing to do, something that Joel Elston and I did, and then later David Bartke and I have done. And now, Wendy, you and I are going to do it. We're going to look at a book, Wendy, that you once described as your favorite Abraham book. Did you remember saying
Absolutely.
That?
Oh, yes, I do remember saying that.
So it's like in the forefront of your mind. That's good. Mm-hmm. It's called The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham. And I am a little embarrassed to say that I didn't read this one first. Well, not embarrassed. That's the wrong word. I was perhaps a little discouraged to find out that this was probably the best book for me to start with, but I didn't find out until after I'd read about three or four other books. I kind of wish I'd seen this before I saw the
secret. It wasn't the first book written. So
no,
it
wasn't.
It didn't come out until a couple years ago.
True, that's true. I think it's supposed to be near the beginning of the series, though, in terms of the order you're supposed to read it, isn't it?
I don't think so. I mean, Asking It Is Given was published a good several years before The Law of Attraction.
Okay.
You know, I think the Law of Attraction book is probably the best primer. Like when people ask me, you know, is there a book you recommend? I recommend that one highly.
Yeah.
Then some of their other ones are more specific. Like there's one about money and there's one about the vortex.
Right.
But I think the book called The Law of Attraction just has a really good overview. But it's not such an overview that you don't get really good detailed information as to how to apply the Law of Attraction. So, you know.
Absolutely true.
And it didn't come out right away. So I'd say get rid of any thoughts you have about being embarrassed or whatever about not reading it sooner. You read it when you're ready.
Well, that's true. That's the main thing. And I just finished it. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to do the book here on the show, because this is a good book. I mean, I'm already recommending it to people online who are into LOA. Because, I mean, this thing is just really well laid out. The first part is actually just, it's more interesting than anything else. Part one is about, first is the foreword by Neil Donald Walsh, the guy who was the author of the Conversations with God series. I love the way he starts. Do you remember the foreword that he wrote? I love the way he starts it. He says, this is it.
I don't. Honestly, it's been years since I've read it. So,
okay. Well,
know,
let me read.
I like going over something that I've read before because it's kind of all fresh and new again.
Right. Well, let me read the beginning to you because it'll just tell you. This is it. Here they are. You don't have to go any further. Put all the other books down. Unenroll from all the workshops and seminars. And tell your life coach you won't need be calling anymore because this is it. Everything you need to know about life and how to make it work. I mean, that's a pretty strong introduction. Here they are. All the rules of the road for this extraordinary journey. All the tools with which to create the experiences you've always wanted. You don't have to go any further than where you are right now. Indeed, look at what you've done already. Just look. I mean, right now, look at what you're holding in your hands. You did that. You put this book right here, right where it is, right in front of your eyes. You manifested it out of the clear blue sky. That alone is all the evidence you need that this book works. Do you understand? No. Don't jump over this. It's important that you really hear this. I love this. I'm telling you that you are holding in your hands the best proof you could ever give yourself that the law of attraction is real, is effective, and produces physical outcomes in the real world. I mean, that's great.
You know, and what's so funny, I don't remember that. However, that so mirrors my experience with Law of Attraction. Mm. Not necessarily the book per se, but when I started learning about Law of Attraction, I, you know, had been a seminar junkie. I'd been to tons of seminars, tons of workshops, tons of online programs. I actually went through all of my receipts and my calendars and whatever, because I wanted to know how much money have I really spent on all of this learning. Over $130,000.
Whew! Oh my goodness!
I've spent over $130,000 on personal development. And what is so fascinating is when I got to the Law of Attraction, I kind of said to myself exactly what his introduction was: is stop, do not proceed, do not bother with any other courses, because this is it. Because I knew that when I started to understand what Law of Attraction really was about, I had a sense of knowingness within me that any question, any desire I would ever have in the present or going forward could somehow be answered by the Law of Attraction. And I had that idea probably 8, 9, 10 years ago, and I have not changed my mind since. That's how potent and powerful the Law of Attraction is.
Well, that probably matches up with when you read the book, actually, now that I think about it, because the book was originally published in 2006. Well, that's 11 years
ago.
But
I didn't read it, though, right away.
Ah.
I was listening to Abraham's CDs, and I don't know, it might have been a couple of years before I ever read the book.
Well, you read it before I did, so you're well ahead of the curve as far as I'm concerned.
But no competition here. No need to throw down the gauntlet. I'll let you have it. You know, whatever you need. It's no big deal to me. Because I really believe, because Law of Attraction is what Law of Attraction is, it's all about matching. And so if you were ready to read the book before, you would have. If I was ready to read the book before, I would have. By the time I bought it, that's when I was ready. And there are times, and I think Law of Attraction was one of them, where sometimes I get the inkling to, like, purchase something, and then it sits on my shelf for a good long while, maybe even a couple years, before I get the impulse to actually start reading.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because, as you know, I ordered a bunch of these Abraham books, realizing that I'd only read a couple, and there were four others I hadn't even looked at. And I got them in the mail and looked at the titles, and did I pick up the Law of Attraction first? No, I picked up the Vortex first. So even then, apparently, I wasn't ready to read it. But after getting into The Vortex, that's been the book that my wife and I have been using to talk about each evening, or most evenings. And we've had a lot of fun doing that. So I said, well, since we're working on that one, I'll pick up The Law of Attraction. And I couldn't put it down. Because, oh my goodness, this is just so beautifully laid out. And I would say, I mean, you mentioned that it's a perfect primer for somebody. I'd say it's a good advanced book, too. It's really good for anyone who, no matter what level of understanding of the Law of Attraction they think they have, this one just fills in gaps like nothing I've ever seen before.
Well, I think the first one I read was Ask and It Is Given. And that book was filled with a ton of different exercises.
Yep.
And frankly, that didn't work for me. The exercises just didn't kind of float my boat. And it wasn't until a long time after I read it, I heard Abraham talking about that book, and I went, oh, I read those words. I guess I didn't pay close enough attention. Meaning that each exercise will say, if you're in this emotional state, like between this state and this state, this would be a good exercise for you. And if not, keep looking for another one.
Right.
Well, you know, to be honest, most of the exercises, you have to be kind of in a pretty good place for them to really work, or, you know, or you have to find just the right one to fit, you know, the right state of emotional being you are. And if the exercise itself doesn't sound fun, or, you know, it's just not up your alley, it didn't work. So I personally did not find many of the exercises useful for me at that time. But I've heard many people talk about the exercises and they've done wonders for them, but it just didn't work for me. So when I read the Law of Attraction, kind of like what you were saying, it kind of fills in so many gaps.
Oh, yeah.
And helps to bring so much understanding and clarity to how Law of Attraction really works, that to me that had a bigger pop and a wow than Ask and It Is Given.
It's funny, too, that you mentioned those exercises. I think there are like 22 of them in that book, Asking It Is Given. And I had very much the same reaction, perhaps even more so, because when I first read that book, and that was my first book as well, and I got to the exercises, I did take into account what it was saying, that, you know, check where you are on the emotional scale before you try this one. And at that time, my emotional scale was definitely in the negative range and not feeling very good. And when I looked at the exercises that were available for the people who were not feeling very good, all they did was make me feel depressed. There was only one that was even mildly interesting, or two of them actually. There were two that were mildly interesting, and I tried them, and one of them I tried with my wife. That was the checkbook game, you know, that one where you keep depositing a larger amount each time, and then you're trying to imagine mm-hmm. how you spend it. Except we didn't do it over a series of days. We did it all the days in one day. So, like, an hour later, we're up at, you know, like $1.5 million deposited into the account, and you just bought, you know, the entire range of possible properties you could buy, and now you got to figure out what to do with this extra $1.5 million. So, I mean, that was good for a laugh.
I did that exercise, and I did do it in the timing they suggest.
You
know, each day you buy something different. But I must not been in the appropriate emotional state, because I already had so many negative beliefs about money that I kept thinking, like, even when I was doing it, like, how is this exercise going to do anything for me? How is this going to change anything for me? So I think I had negative thinking about it while I was doing it, which I don't know that it said anything about what to do about that, but
it didn't
really work for me.
Yeah. Well, that's actually why we all ended up doing it all in one day, because I knew I was in such a bad place. I was also in a negative place, and I was in such a bad place that if I had to wait day by day for the next round of it, I could possibly have committed suicide. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but that was like, it was like pulling teeth. Oh, God, I have to wait another 24 hours before I can do the next step. So that's why I said, well, why don't we just do all the steps in one day? You know, we'll do an entire calendar month in the next 2 hours. And that was fun. I mean, it was silly. It was really silly, because you just spent, you know, $850,000, and now you got to spend, you know, $1.65 million, and you're running out of things to spend it on. And you're saying, well, I'll just invest part of it. No, you're not allowed to do that. You have to spend it. And that,
you know, one of the,
that's just silly.
I know that when I've worked with clients, we've come to the point where others will say, well, but aren't I supposed to do, and then they'll say something that they've heard from other law of attraction teachers, or they've read a book, and I'll say, that's a good thing to do. However, you're not there right now. And so I really do take into account where somebody is in their understanding of law of attraction, in their growth cycle, in their emotional well-being. I mean, you know, because if they're in a really negative place, I'm not going to give them some jovial la 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 exercise to do. I'm
going
to give them something that meets who they are in that moment right now, where they're going to get a positive result and it'll make a difference. And, you know, to me, that, not that I'm trying to, like, do a marketing pitch on coaching, but to me, that's one of the benefits of having a coach, is they can take the huge plethora of information and tailor it to an individual and say, this is where you're at now. This is what I suggest we work on, you know, instead of this huge array of, there's just so much stuff. And it's sometimes it's a hit or miss game.
Okay, so I guess we have to amend Neil Don Walsh's foreword, where he says, tell your life
well,
coach you won't be needing
to be
calling.
Well, he said no more life coaches, but that would kind of undo all the essence of my calling. So. Well, but I will say, nobody really has to have a life coach. I mean, all the information, all the intelligence that exists in the universe is there for our connecting with that. However, those that don't know how to do it or when to escalate the process, that's where life coaches are awesome, because we can help you go from 0 to 60 in a really short period of time.
If
you do it, you know, just however you think to do it, it could take a long time.
Oh, sure.
Because I'll tell you, the $130,000 that I've spent on all of the programs and seminars and whatnot that I've done in my life, none of that was life coaching. That was all do-it-yourself, go listen to the information, and hope for the best. Well, if you just heard my price tag, $130,000, I spent years doing that.
Yes.
Years. And if I could do it all again, I would spend such a small fraction of that on a life coach that would help to dial in exactly what I needed for who I am.
Mm.
And they would have just presented to me what was important for me instead of me getting the full buffet, you know, and like tasting from every single thing on the buffet. They would, you know, hone in and go, you like, you know, chicken parmesan, eat that. You don't need to eat everything on there. You'll be a glutton and you still, you know, won't have the result you want. Oh, you're looking for weight loss? Well, that ain't it then.
Trust me, you won't like the liverwurst, but the chicken parm is great.
Right. But once you get, like, even, you know, with the whole concept of law of attraction, once a person gets to a point that they've learned to trust their inner being, they trust the universe has their back, they trust that law of attraction is working on their behalf if they will follow the principles, if a person has gotten to the point that those trust levels have been built and their beliefs are solid, then you can ask your inner being everything you want, and you don't need an outside source for guidance because you've got everything you need from within.
Yeah, that's very true. It's an excellent point. Now, I have to say, in my own situation, not only did I not have anywhere near a $130,000 budget on self-development, I mean, that was laughable for my situation. But on top of that, when I was first exploring this, I was in such a bad place that I was just trying to grab, you know, the freebie information wherever I could find it and maybe buy a book or two, because that was about all I was willing to convince myself I could afford to do. And then just trying to piece it together from all the stuff that I could find out there, which is probably the worst way to go about doing it, because, oh my goodness, you end up with this crazy hodgepodge of information that doesn't fit together and often steps on each other's toes because you're getting it from a variety of different sources and they each have their own perspectives and their own assumptions that they're making and so forth. And when you're all done, you either have a much stronger mind, which is a good thing to have because you need to be able to control your perspective, or you're insane and you said, enough of this stuff, I'm done with it, let's go on to something else in life, I'll just, you know, do something else and just kill myself because I can't take this anymore.
Well. And a couple points I'll make. I started this stuff back in my 20s. Life coaching wasn't around at that time. Therapy and counseling was, but
right.
Life coaching wasn't. And I really thought when I was taking these courses, this was the most cutting-edge stuff available to me in the area of personal development and self-growth.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, I didn't have that $130,000 available to me. I went into really, really deep debt to take these courses, but I was willing to go into debt because that's how much I wanted more in my life, how much I wanted to have control over what was created in my world. And I didn't know any other way to do it except when there would be some Tony Robbins guru or some other guru that was talking about how, hey, you'll have more, be more, do more, and we'll help you to do all these things. I'm like, they were pushing all my buttons, and I'm like, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I didn't get it, because I got a lot from every single course and workshop that I took. Oh my gosh, I will never be ungrateful for what I learned from Tony Robbins, because my first Tony Robbins program is what kind of set my life in a positive direction.
Well, that's good.
I just didn't stop there. I wanted more. There was more. It was like I had an insatiable appetite for learning more and growing more. And, but yeah, I went into deep debt to do it.
Well,
but not anymore. I'm over that one. Because why? The answer is because law of attraction has within it everything I'll ever need to know for the rest of my life.
Which is fantastic. And by the way, what's one of the reasons we're doing the show? We want to save you both the $130,000 and the floundering around listening to stuff on the internet, because that's all you feel like you can afford. Anybody can afford this book. And for the price of this book, you know, $12-$15 or whatever it is, this is definitely worth $130,000. There is no doubt in my mind.
You can even go to my website, wendydiller.com, and click on the resources tab. And if you don't remember the name of this book or anything, I've got some of the best books that I believe in on that on my website, and you could just click on it. It'll take you straight to Amazon, and boom, you can buy the books.
Very good. Okay, well, that makes it even easier, so that's good. But the thing that strikes me about the book is that it's divided into a few sections, and the first section kind of talks about what Jerry and Esther Hicks were doing when they were looking for answers. So that's where I think all this kind of ties together in kind of a fun way, because Jerry in particular was the one, and Wendy, interrupt me whenever you want to, because you probably know the story better than I do, but Jerry was the one who was the question asker. He was the one who wanted to, you know, figure out all the answers to life, the universe, and everything. And Esther was about the opposite end of that spectrum. She was not interested in pursuing any, especially the esoteric stuff that Jerry was into, which was what makes this whole teaming of the two of them for the purpose of channeling Abraham actually hysterical. I mean, Esther was terrified of the idea of channeling. And they tell the story in the first part of this book about how Jerry was the one asking the questions, and Esther was fearful about the whole thing, but she tells the story about how her fears got resolved, and how they discovered first the Seth books and a number of other channelers. They met up with Sheila, who channeled Theo. I had never heard of Theo before. Had you heard of Theo? I'd never heard of that before.
I honestly had only heard of Theo through Abraham talking about Esther and Jerry's experiences.
Okay. So anyway, they talked about how they channeled Theo, and apparently, I guess that's where Esther kind of let her guard down, because they got a session with Sheila channeling Theo, and Jerry asked all the questions, and after the half hour was up, Esther said, well, I want my half hour now. So all of a sudden, the guard was down, because apparently the answers were pretty darn intriguing. So she got her half hour, and then they wanted to have another half hour after that. And then there's the little story, and I'm probably remembering it wrong. I know it's in the book here, and I'm not seeing it quickly, but there's the story about how Theo... Oh, here it is, yes. Esther was kind of disappointed that the session was over, and the person who was running the recorder, the tape recorder, said, do you have one last question? Would you like to know the name of your spiritual guide? And says here, that was not a question that would have occurred to me, because I had never heard the term spiritual guide, but I like the sound of such a thing, so I said, yes, who is my spiritual guide? And Theo said, we are told it will be given to you directly. You will have a clairaudient experience, and you will know. Now, Esther doesn't actually say this, but that must have terrified her, because the reason that she gave, or the reasons she gave, why she was so resistant to all the stuff Jerry had been investigating all these years was that it went counter to her teachings that she had learned as a Christian. She had been brought up in a Christian church. She had a fear of the devil, fear of, you know, Satan being sent to hell and all that kind of thing. And here was somebody talking about, you know, basically putting voices into her head. That must have terrified her.
I hear you. I mean, honestly, I was not ready for hearing about any of this until I had my own personal experiences with expanding my viewpoint of my relationship with the universe and with the higher power, and started to put all the religious beliefs that I had been trained in a very different context.
Yeah, yeah.
And I started to, you know, for me, and I certainly don't ask anybody else on the planet to change their religious beliefs. If they're feeling good based on, you know, the belief system they have, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I had so many internal negative feelings, and when I say internal, it's stuff I didn't tell other people, because when I did, or if I'd ask a question of another Christian who either went to church with me or my family members, it's kind of like there was always one direction for how they wanted to steer me, which was away from my question. They wanted to steer me more into, but the Bible says this, and the Bible says that, and the preacher says this, and the pastor says that. And I'm like, but it's not feeling good to me. It's not feeling right. And then I was told, don't trust your feelings. And the more I was told, don't trust your feelings, I'm like, well, then how come they keep popping up?
Yeah, right.
You know, what's the deal? And so for me, when I started to put the religious ideas in a different context and I started expanding to a bigger worldview, that was when I became more open to other concepts, such as law of attraction, such as the experience that Esther went through. I so related to her because I could tell you all the things of how I was warned. Ooh, that's bad. That's evil. That's demonic. You'll go to hell if you believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, I'm a good Christian. I'm not going to go down that road.
Right.
But over time, I started to, you know, shed some of those very black and white belief systems, and I no longer believe those things. And so it made space, if you will, for some new concepts. And, you know, I didn't just drink the Kool-Aid when I started listening to Abraham Hicks. I didn't know who they were. I didn't know the backstory. I just knew I heard the teaching, and it resonated with me in such a profound way. I'm like, I got to have more of that. Got to have more of that. And the more I listened, the more it felt like it was answering the questions that I had been seeking answers to for years, that no other system or guru or religion was able to answer for me. So for me, that's how I come to why this is so powerful for me. But I would never tell anybody else to, like, turn their back on what's important to them.
And apparently, I mean, right here in the story that we kind of left off on, where Esther was given that information by this channeled spirit named Theo, apparently at that point she wasn't freaked out as much as I might have thought she was, because the advice was that they should meditate on it. And she didn't even know what meditate was. I mean, the way she expresses it here is, we sat with the intention of meditating, whatever that meant. And I remember thinking, I'm going to meditate every day for 15 minutes. I'm going to find out the name of my spiritual guide. She says it felt odd for Jerry and me to be doing this strange thing together. So we sat in large wingback chairs with an etage between us so we couldn't see each other.
That to me is so funny. But I get it. I even get that. It's like, this is such a weird experience. I don't even want my spouse to watch me while I'm doing it because it feels that weird. And yet, she felt it was okay to do it, like something in her resonated with the doing of it, even though it felt weird.
Yeah.
So I totally get that.
And apparently it was a very satisfying experience from the get-go, the very first time they tried it. They said, well, let's see, let's read the section. The section is called Something Began Breathing Me. And it says, Theo's instructions on the process of meditation had been very brief. For 15 minutes every day, sit in a quiet room, wear comfortable clothes, and focus on your breathing. And as your mind wanders, and it will, just release the thought and focus back on your breathing. So we set a timer for 15 minutes, and I settled back in my large, comfortable chair and focused on my breathing. I began counting my breaths, in and out. Almost immediately, I began to feel a sort of numbness come over me. It was an extremely pleasant sensation. I liked it. Now, I have to say, I can't ever remember feeling numbness during a meditation. I felt various sensations, but not that. She got it in the first 15 minutes, so I guess that's the first real clue that we get that she really was good at you know, potentially good at being a channeler.
Walt, have you ever done, like, a guided meditation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And have you never felt that numbness that she's talking about?
Not numbness, no.
Okay.
I've been through, like, three or four of them, and to be honest, the only one that I liked was the first one. And the first one was magnificent. The other three were okay. They didn't really do much for me. The first one blew my mind. And it was with somebody, I don't even remember what the leader's name was. It was some group that met like about an hour from where I lived at the time. And I, for whatever reason, I never reconnected with them again. Oh, I know why I didn't reconnect with them again. It's because other than this experience, this guided meditation experience, most of this meeting was about bringing up all of your dysfunctionalities and talking about your dysfunctionalities. And I really was not interested in doing that, so I didn't go back.
Good for you.
But the meditation was magnificent. And she put us through this guided meditation. And I tell you, I don't know how to describe it. It didn't feel like numbness. But she described this thing where we basically traveled off of the earth in our imaginations and out into the solar system. And I felt like I was really there. I thought, oh, this is cool. I like this.
Well, and, you know, this warrants just kind of like an insertion in the conversation, whereas, you know, Esther is describing the experience she had. And so for her, it felt like numbness. If other people are looking for that particular response or result when they attempt meditation, if they don't get it, it doesn't mean they're doing it wrong.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know that I've ever felt, quote, numbness, but I have felt what I would call a state of bliss where I just felt like I was not my normal Wendy in my body. I felt like I was more than that. I felt like I was connected to something way bigger. I remember another guided meditation where I was laying on my back, and I couldn't necessarily feel one part of my body versus another. Like I could focus on it, and I knew it was there, but it was kind of like my body didn't feel to me the way my body normally feels to me. And that's just one way that I explain it. But it's like I do believe we all have, because we're all so unique, we each have our own way of experiencing what Abraham calls meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the purpose of meditation is to let go of resistance. It's literally for nothing else but to let go of resistance. And so if you can feel a sense of relief or just have a little bit more well-being or feeling of happiness after you've done whatever you call meditation, then it's done its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of doing meditation over time is to start to practice that vibrational essence of what it feels like to let go of resistance.
I also like this description of meditation that this channeled being Theo gave, because it was the best one I've ever heard. For 15 minutes a day, sit in a quiet room, wear comfortable clothing, focus on your breathing. When your mind wanders, and it will, release the thought and focus back on your breathing. So the way I describe that is, step one, focus on your breathing. Step two, return to step one whenever you lose track of what you're doing. And and that is a nice, simplified way of doing it. It's not like all this stuff with mantras and sitting in lotus position and all this other stuff that people suggest. And it's like, oh, God. Do you guys really enjoy torturing yourselves? Because that's what it seems like to me. I couldn't bring myself to do those kinds of meditation. But I saw this and said, yeah, that makes sense to me. I can do that. That's easy. It's simple. No foofra. Just, I don't even have to dress a certain way. I just lay down like, okay, here we go. Or sit in a chair. That's all I need to do. Just breathe and focus on the breathing. Well, I can do that.
For me, focusing on the breathing doesn't even work.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't focus on breathing.
What do you focus on?
What do I do? I don't really know. I think I focus, well, I do focus on feeling good.
Okay.
And when thoughts come to me, I notice them and let them go. I don't like engage them and go, ooh, what else can I do with that? But I also don't resist them and go, no, you're not supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be meditating now. If I notice a thought, I just notice it. And for me, that is very relaxing.
Mm, okay.
It's like I don't have any agenda except to feel better and to let go of resistance. And for me, and this is a Wendy thing,
right?
Focusing on my breathing had been so drilled in me that that's the way you're supposed to do meditation. And I think I resisted the idea of meditation for so long that the concept of focusing on my breathing was connected with the negative experience of not doing whatever meditation was.
Oh, I can see that.
So,
yeah.
I came into meditation in a really bizarre way. I started realizing that when I'm vacuuming, that I'm letting go of resistance, that I have some incredible epiphanies while I'm vacuuming. While I'm taking a shower, oh my gosh, incredible thoughts float through my mind. New and exciting things happen. When I'm just waking up in the morning, the same thing. And I started to notice that all of these places that I got these incredible epiphanies were, that was the result of what you would call meditation, but it wasn't happening the way traditional meditators got it. And so I kind of came up with my own thing, which, like I'm saying, if I want to do it purposefully, if I just want to sit down and relax, I'll go, here's a good time to just let all my thoughts just fall away. Now, I call that meditation. And when I'm done, I feel better. And when I'm done, I know I've let go of resistance.
That's the bottom line.
And I do know in my life I have a really good, really high set point. So something must have worked.
Yeah. Sounds to me like it did brilliantly, I would say. And by the way, for those who are interested, copies of Wendy's book, Meditation and the Art of Vacuum Cleaning, will be available in the lobby at the end of the show.
I'll be writing that one soon. I mean, I even I swear to you, Walt, this is the dumbest thing, but I remember one time on my knees scrubbing the bottom of the bathtub, getting an incredible epiphany. And so one of the other and I used to get them when I would cut the lawn or prune the bushes. I noticed any time I was focused on a physical act, it's like it somehow released all the resistances that I had to all the millions of thoughts I had currently had where resistance was there. Because now I was busy mowing the lawn. And I enjoyed mowing the lawn. And I'd get great epiphanies while I was mowing the lawn. So for me, doing physical exertion actually was a state of meditation for me.
Well, it's certainly no sillier than the form of meditation and the form of reception that Esther got, because after she meditated for a while, she started getting messages by writing with her nose. So, I mean, doing the bathroom is nothing compared to that as far as I'm concerned.
I just like to throw out there that things that other people, like, because once, I mean, when you hear that Esther, who people who do admire her, you know, get these great messages through Abraham, they want to be like her, so they want to follow her, so they want to do what she did. And there's an expectation that it'll come the same way. And my intention is not to say that that won't work, but if it doesn't happen that way, don't get disappointed. Look for what's right for you. Look for the end result. Do you feel better? Do you feel lighter? Do you feel less tense and resistant in your body? And if you got a lightness feeling in your body, then you did the right thing.
I agree. In fact, I was one of the people who wanted to experience the channeling like Esther did until I read the part about her writing letters in the air with her nose. And I thought to myself, I don't want to pull a muscle in my neck. That doesn't sound like fun. It sounds like it could take forever to write out a message. I mean, I was glad when they finally got to the typewriter and they could actually pass the messages that way, because, I mean, that must have been a tremendous physical relief for Esther not to have to keep writing with her nose. That's the way I look at it. So, I mean, I definitely didn't want to have to go through what she went through in order to learn it. I'm glad that she learned it. I'm glad that she was able to become the translator that she is, so she could translate the blocks of thought that she gets from Abraham, but I'm not sure I'd want to go through what she went through. That was quite a bit.
And my point, you don't have to go through anything that's uncomfortable.
Absolutely.
It will come to you however it comes to you.
Exactly right. What they did do, though, is they got to the point where finally Jerry could ask questions of Abraham, and so they started having conversations. And indeed, they touch a little bit on some of the early conversations that Jerry had with Abraham through Esther in this part one of the book. Well worth the read. I mean, it's not something that I think we want to spend a lot of time on here during the program, but certainly you do not want to skip that part when you get the book. I mean, would you agree?
Oh, I think the whole thing is valuable. And I think that because, well, you're calling it channeling. Esther purposely doesn't call it channeling. She doesn't like that word because that's connected to religious negative connotation for her, which I get because it's
She call it? Do you know? Does she give it a label?
Yes, she receives Abraham.
Oh, okay.
She receives blocks of thought.
Okay.
She receives understanding. So I tend to use those same words because that feels more accurate to me. Anyway, what was I
saying? Well, I like that as well. I never really liked the word channeling, not because of religious beliefs. I had pretty much given up the confining religious beliefs long before I ran into this stuff. Just because there's like a new agey thing that I associate with channeling. And I mean, I've hung around with new agey types a lot, but it's not really something I wanted to kind of be associated with myself. So giving it a different word, that actually works for me. I like that. Seriously.
Well, so I think that listening to the story or reading the story of how Esther came to receive Abraham, I think is a fascinating story as well as just a really great foundation for how she presents what she presents.
Oh, yeah.
So I find value in the whole book, A to Z.
They do finish up this first section with a little two-page section that's got a very weird title. And maybe you can explain to me what this title means, because I've read it, I've read the section, I've read the rest of the book, and I still don't know what the title means.
Okay, I got the book in front of me. What page are you on?
I'm on page 23, so we're just at the end of section one. And this section is entitled An Introduction to Being Well-Being. So it sounds like Jean Valjean. I mean, what is that? Being well-being? What is being well-being?
Well, the way I take that to mean is there's a state of being versus a state of doing. And there's oftentimes we talk about we do things, but Abraham really talks from a place of being, beingness, being who you are. And if you be, and I don't know if you've heard kind of like the metaphysical world, they've kind of taken the taken liberties with grammar, if you will.
Yeah.
And they'll say, you know, like be the weather, be happiness. Instead of try being this or being in a state of being, it's like that to me is how they're using it. It's more like an introduction to be well-being.
So how to be the well-being, except, sort of.
Yes. And being, the word being, is an action present word. Anytime you have an ing, it means it's in motion. You're in the present active verb. So be, just to say to be something, that's a static thing. But when you're being something, you're in a constant state of it. So right now I'm being in teacher mode. I'm being teacher. It's kind of like it's not just, oh, I am a teacher. I'm being teacher. I live teacher. I breathe teacher. That's who I am to the core of my being. So in this case, an introduction to being well-being, that's all about how you align with well-being. So you're not just coming into well-being or having well-being be outside of you. You actually embody well-being.
Okay. Well, I'll go with that. I mean, if it were me, I guess I'd want to be the editor and rewrite it. But, you know, that works. If we can explain it that way, that's fine.
and you know, they like I say, they take some grammatic liberties, but it's very purposeful.
Very, very
you know,
confusing is what it is.
It's not just like, oh, Esther doesn't know good grammar. It's like, no, there's purposefulness behind it. Because sometimes I think we just don't have English equivalents for some of the things that they're talking about. So they take the English language and kind of like manipulate it to present what it is they're trying to actually, you know, present.
Well, certainly what they're presenting in this little tiny 2 to 3 page chapter is really foundational. There's no doubt about that. Because when you flip the page, you get to the section entitled The Universal Laws Defined. And this is the first time where they actually lay out 3 different laws. And it's the first time I ever heard them.
I was going to say, I remember we did a show on the 3 universal laws. Is this the page that you pulled this from?
There's actually 2 sections in the book that do this. This is the first section. This is the section where I first saw it. So, yeah, page 24. The second paragraph is where they start defining the 3 laws. And we can just read this section if you like. I'll start from the top. It says, there are 3 eternal universal laws that we want to assist you in understanding more clearly so that you may apply them intentionally, effectively, and satisfactorily through your physical expression of life. The law of attraction is the first of the laws that we will offer. For if you do not understand and are not able to effectively apply the law of attraction, then the second law, the science of deliberate creation, and the third, the art of allowing, cannot be utilized. You must first understand and effectively utilize the first law in order to understand and utilize the second, and you must be able to understand and utilize the second law before you will be able to understand and utilize the third. And then they define
the
3.
What? Stop right there for a second. It never dawned on me that, in a sense, there is a sequence.
Oh, yeah.
To how we can deliberately utilize these laws.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very, very specifically laid out here. You do it in order, they're saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, the first law, that's the law of attraction. That's the one we've all heard about. That says, I don't know where they get these definitions from, because they're awkward in English, but it's that which is like unto itself is drawn. I mean, that's just awkward.
I think I've been reading King James Bible for so long, this makes total sense.
God, why can't they just say, you know, like attracts like, or, you know, birds of a feather or something? It's just so much straightforward when you do it that way. When you say that which is like unto itself is drawn, it's like, what are they talking about? You drawing a beer or something?
Okay, so for you, we'll say like things are attracted to like things.
Yeah, there we go. I like that better.
All right.
So anyway, continuing, it says, while this may seem like a rather simple statement, it defines the most powerful law in the universe, a law that attracts all things at all times. Nothing exists that is unaffected by this powerful law. And I've got to say something parenthetically, because somebody raised an interesting question in one of the Facebook groups. It's one I had never really thought about, but it's a valid question on the surface. When you look a little bit deeper, you realize that the connection isn't as good as you might think it is. But on the surface, it looks good. Because they asked, well, okay, law of attraction says that like attracts like, that you know, that which is like unto itself is drawn. Okay. In other words, the same things get attracted to the same things. But in science, opposites attract. Positive and negative attract. Positive magnetism and negative magnetism attract to each other. The positive protons are attracted to the negative electrons. And that's an interesting point. Why is it that science says that opposites attract, but the law of attraction says like things attract? That one on the surface, it kind of stops you and says, well, yeah, something's wrong there.
Do you have an answer to that question?
I don't have a complete answer. I do have a partial answer. Because when I ran into that, that stopped me. I said, that's a valid question. What do you do with that one? So I did a little research. I did some quick Googling and checked into, I wanted to refresh my memory about what science has to say about opposites attracting, particularly electrical opposites. Found an interesting post about it on Quora.com, Q-U-O-R-A. And you can find this post, just do a Google search on almost anything related to what we're talking about here, you'll find it. And the questioner was asking, essentially, why is it that opposites attract when you're looking at, say, electricity, or you're looking at, you know, atomic models or whatever? And there were probably, I'm going to guess, 15 to 20 different answers given by 15 to 20 different people who were clearly experts in their field. Many of them were quantum physicists. Some of them were more mathematically oriented. Some of them were interested in other sciences. And they all had their own explanations about why it is that opposites attract. And you know what was really interesting, Wendy? None of the explanations agreed with each other.
Oh, wonderful.
So my reaction, this is literally what I replied to the person on Facebook. I said, well, don't trust the science too much. And here's my link. Take a look. You'll find the scientists can't agree among themselves why they claim that opposites attract.
So, you know, that brings up this point. And I just want to explore this idea a little bit deeper, because I think that's a great question that the person on Facebook raised.
Yeah.
So I've heard Abraham often talk about how every subject is two subjects, that which is wanted and that which is not wanted.
Good point.
And so I think very linearly. So if I think about like a line that stretches across the horizon, and on one side is what you don't want, and on the other side is what you do want. And what I've heard Abraham talk about is that there is like a vibrational, gosh, what do I call it? There's something about the vibration that is in a similar place for both that which is wanted and that which is not wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all on the same line. But which side of the stick you focus on is which side of the stick you bring to you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm not quite sure what to do with that. And then I'm going to add another piece. And I'm throwing this out here, hopefully, because you may have an idea as to what to do with it. They also talk about, like, a person, let's say, and this is gruesome, but let's say somebody who has been raped. They'll say, well, what did this innocent woman do to get raped?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I've heard them say, if the woman was fearful of violence against her or rape specifically, I mean, she didn't even have to be focusing on rape, but if there was a feeling of vulnerability, lack of safety that she was focusing on and kind of fearing for something in this area, that what would cause the rapist to pick her home to break into and therefore rape her versus somebody else on the block who might have even been closer, is because the rapist's thoughts, feelings, intensities, and intentions match up with the person who's sensing vulnerability and fear of physical harm.
Yep.
And somehow those are actually considered equivalent vibrations.
Yeah.
Even though if you look at it, they seem very opposite. You know, one is, quote, the victim, one is, you know, the persecutor.
Yeah, that's true.
They seem like they're on opposite ends of the extreme, and yet when Abraham talks about them, they say it's a very similar vibrational quality that they're both emitting.
Well, we're skipping way ahead because this topic actually does get addressed in this book, and I can point you to where it is.
Oh.
It's on page 148, and the subhead on 148 says, "But what about the innocent little child?" Jerry asks, "Many people will accept your basic premise about creating through thought, Abraham, but the point where I see a number of people stub their toes, so to speak, or find difficulty with your teachings is when thinking about innocent children. They'll ask, but what about the little children? How could little children have thoughts that would bring them physical deformities, ill health, or a violent invasion of their bodies of some sort? And Abraham replies, it is because the babies have been surrounded by those who are having those thoughts, and so they have been receiving the essence of those thoughts." And Jerry says, something like telepathy? And Abraham says, yeah, that is correct. You see, long before the child is speaking, the child is thinking. But you cannot know how clear in thought that little child is because he has not yet learned to verbally communicate with you. He is not yet communicating his thoughts. And Jerry says, the child is not thinking in words. That is, I can sense that a child is having thoughts long before he or she is speaking words. Abraham says, the child is thinking and receiving vibrational thought from you on the day that he enters your environment. That is the reason why beliefs are transmitted so easily from parent to child, from parent to child, from parent to child. The child is vibrationally receiving your fears and your beliefs even without your spoken word. If you want to do that which is of greatest value for your child, give thought only to that which you want, and your child will receive only those wanted thoughts. So they kind of came at that problem from an oblique angle, but it really does address it very nicely that, you know, little children, as clear and as connected as they are to source, they know that they're dependent on the big adults, and so they're going to be very influenced by the thoughts of those big adults.
And I don't even think it's a matter of they know that they're dependent. It's just simply, if you're in the environment, they pick up on those vibrations.
Yeah.
I mean, if you and I walk into a place where there's just been, let's say, a crime committed, but now the crime has, you know, all the people, the police have left and whatever, but you walk into that space, if you are vibrationally sensitive, meaning if you have taught yourself, or maybe it just comes naturally, where you have awareness of something in an environmental space, you might walk in and go, ooh, something creepy feels like it's here.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't feel good to me.
Right.
You don't even have to see it or know it to pick up on it.
That's true.
And if you can allow yourself to consider focusing on it, the more you focus on it, the more that vibrational energy gets activated within you.
Yeah, it's very valid.
And so if you look at it from the baby's perspective, a baby doesn't enter the world on day one and say, okay, I'm dependent on you adults, come on, you know, I hope you do the right thing by me. No, they just show up. And whatever active vibrations are going on within the world around them, it just is something they absorb as they're experiencing the world.
Yeah, very true. And getting back to the question about the two-ended stick, so to speak, and how is it that in science that opposites seem to attract, but in the law of attraction, it's like attracts like. How can that be? You mentioned the whole thing about the two-ended stick, the stick that has the thing and then the lack of the thing. And the thing that I noticed when you described that, because you said maybe it might cue something in my mind. It did cue something in my mind. What cued in my mind was how easily we who are still learning how to be disciplined with our minds, how easily we can fail to distinguish between the thing end of the stick and the lack end of the stick. We are attracted to both ends of it at the same time, practically. It takes discipline to learn to focus only on the thing end of the stick and to stop paying attention to the lack end.
You're calling the thing end, meaning the desired end.
The desired end, right.
Okay, got you.
Yeah.
That which is wanted versus that which is not.
That which is wanted versus that which is not. I mean, how often when we're first studying this stuff do we find ourselves tripping up because we think we're focusing on the wanted part and then somebody points out to us, but you're actually focusing on the not wanted part. And we thought we were really focusing on the wanted part.
Well, and how I think most of us have been raised, and I don't mean raised because we had ill-meaning parents. I mean just the way society has been and we just absorbed what is. Oftentimes we think if we choose to express something in words and we use all our positive words, then we actually somehow oftentimes have deluded ourselves that now the positive things should manifest in our life because I used all the right words when the finer distinction of understanding law of attraction is that law of attraction doesn't pay attention to our words.
Mm-hmm.
Law of attraction only pays attention to our vibrational broadcast.
That's true.
And what we as humans oftentimes fail to understand is that oftentimes we're feeling the lack of having the thing we want while we're speaking the words of the thing we want. And we haven't, you know, as a society, we haven't been trained how to be consistent and congruent in our communication. Because true congruence is when your words and your feelings and your body language all equal the same thing.
Very true.
But, yeah. You know, how often have we experienced somebody being sarcastic with us?
Oh, all the time.
And we know they're being sarcastic
yep.
because their tone of voice and their body language is telling us that they mean one thing, even though their words are saying something else.
Exactly.
We know this stuff. We yep. know when sarcasm is coming, sometimes, usually. But when we're having, quote, a serious conversation, we somehow don't always recognize for ourselves when we're actually not congruent with our own words.
Yeah, that's true. I also wanted to offer one final...
Finish
up your thought. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and sometimes I feel like it's an art form to learn how to be congruent, but it's definitely something that we can learn. And when it comes to law of attraction, it's almost essential. If you want to really be a deliberate creator, it's kind of like it's essential that you start to pay attention. Are my feelings equaling the words that I'm speaking, or is there a mismatch? Because if there's a mismatch, I promise you, what law of attraction delivers will not equal your words.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
It will always equal what you feel.
Exactly.
Which is your vibration offering.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I also wanted to add one final thought because we're down to a really short amount of time left. But the concern about opposites attracting, particularly electrically charged opposites, one of the examples being an atom, protons and neutrons being attracted. Notice that the science also tells us, particularly among quantum physicists, that if we zoom in and look for that proton and neutron, and we really can't actually see it yet, we don't have electron microscopes that can consistently spot it, but when we zoom in, theoretically, all we really find out at that lower, you know, that zoomed in level is a whole bunch of energy, and finding the proton and neutron where they're actually located can be really, really difficult to do. So it raises the question, in that huge energy field, how do you know that the two are attracting? And I'm going to just leave it right there because we're out of time. But Wendy, this has been great. Let's continue the discussion tomorrow. We don't really have time to say how to subscribe except to say subscribe and share with others. But Wendy, so, yeah, please do that.
Hit the subscribe button.
But this is the kind of topic that sometimes does require personal assistance. So if somebody wants that kind of coaching assistance, how do they reach you?
Go to my website at wendydillard.com.
All right. And we'll pick this up tomorrow. You're going to join us tomorrow, right, Wendy?
Yeah. Hello.
All right.
So
there's two of us. I hope that the listener joins us, too. That way, all of us will be exploring the continued adventures of the Law of Attraction, the basic teachings of Abraham, here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.